This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. The book has a bit of a long title, The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence, The People Side of Business. But even more informative is the blurb above the title. That blurb simply reading, A Roadmap for Understanding People in the Workplace. A roadmap for understanding people in the workplace? Could that be true? Well, not to color your perspective, but if today's guest talks anywhere near as well as he writes, once you hear him, you just might want to slip a copy of his new book into the mail slot of every boss or manager you've ever encountered. Psychologist Lee Hirsch has devised a simple, easy-to-read formula for increasing productivity based on completely rethinking how managers should view the human beings who work for them. And we will dive right into Dr. Hirsch's ideas right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone if you have any thoughts about these two questions. What could your boss do that would make you more effective at work? If you are a boss, what's your biggest challenge with employees? Our guest has lots of answers to share. He's a psychologist, a therapist in private practice, a business consultant, co-founder of a business consulting firm, and co-author of the new book, The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence. But if you have ever spent any time in any kind of workplace, you probably have some suggestions too, so we want to make sure you know you are invited to join our conversation at 888-967-2825. Actually, the full title of the book is The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence, The People Side of Business. Dr. Lee Hirsch, thank you so very much, sir, for making time for us.
Thank you for letting me come on and share my book.
Well, Dr. Hirsch, there are many elements of evolutionary psychology in this new book. And I'm curious, are you saying that if we are going to be most effective at work, we pretty much have to have a better understanding of how the human psyche evolved?
The answer is absolutely yes. But it doesn't have to be talked about in technical terms. And it actually can be used in a wide range of settings. So it begins in the first chapter, which is the one that focuses most highly on evolutionary psychology. And the key thing there is the brain works from the bottom up. Now, even the most reasonable, calm person is going to react to certain things that are predictable because of evolutionary psychology. The example that I'd like to give is if you're in the woods taking a walk and a bear behind you growls, you're not likely to say, should I say boo or should I kick him in the toes? What you do without thinking about it is you wet your pants and run like crazy. So that is a hardwired response. And hardwiring is a very significant issue that is in the media and has been, particularly in the last 5 years. Many of the models that I learned when I was in graduate school 30 years ago really turned out to be less than accurate and sometimes categorically wrong. But the brain works from the bottom up, and in order to avoid the flight-fight response, one can needs to work with that, and the person has to feel safe.
Tell me a little bit more, if you would, Dr. Lee Hirsch, about this phrase, the brain works from the bottom up. Describe what that means. Are you talking about physically starting at the bottom of our heads and working up?
Literally. Now, we're not aware of the limbic system, the flight fight primary lower sections of the brain. That's if you think about your head, and if you put your hands together from your ears, covering your ears, and felt the back of your brain, that's where the lower brain or the more primitive brain or automatic brain exists. And that is, if you look at anthropology, you'll see that the shape of the brain and the skull have changed dramatically through the millennia.
So with the brain working from the bottom up, you're talking literally physically about the bottom part of the brain, but are you also saying in terms of pretty much everything a human being does, every situation we find ourselves in, every possible threat or perceived threat that we respond to, we respond first with the oldest parts of the brain, not the more evolved cognitive functions?
You're exactly right. That if there is real threat, you know, there's a fire in a building and you feel you're trapped, you're going to do everything you can to get out of the building.
So how does this relate to being in a workplace and what you teach business managers?
Ah, I'm glad you asked. The next layer of the brain that's involved is the midbrain, and that is the emotional center of the brain. And that's where loving the outdoors, loving hunting is going on all around us these days. It is the hunting season, and also your interest in somebody. You're talking to somebody, and you find yourself being drawn into that person, and you say to yourself, you know, this is a real nice guy, girl, or whatever, and that I'd like to meet them. Or I've been hearing them chatter to somebody else, and I'm curious. And so the thinking part of the brain, which is the cerebral cortex, and if you ever think about, had the opportunity to see on TV or in any of the electronic media, it shows, and it's kind of a whitish, rutted landscape. You'd kind of feel like you were hiking up and down hills if you were a little critter in there. Now, that's the part that makes, and that goes all the way to the forehead. So I'm moving not only higher, but I'm moving forward toward the temple, to the front of your face. And that's where we find that is the thinking, logical brain. Now, to answer your question, Tom, what happens is that if something upsets somebody or their heart starts going pitter-pat, then the limbic system is going to go, that works for me, and then you might go up to a person and engage in conversation. But that last part of attraction and thinking about, is this somebody that I might want to talk to, comes from the most recent development in the human brain, still evolving, which is probably a good point to make, which is, our brains are still evolving as a species, but our brains also evolve in a different way, which is, you know, if it's a two-year-old, you got to have your eyes on the child and mostly the hands. Then we reach the disaster area of adolescence, and we give the child a guided missile, in the form of a car and expect them to make good judgments. In my case, my older daughter, from the first time she got behind the wheel, she saw the mileage signs as the minimum. So if it said 45, she certainly wasn't going to go below 45.
I think we're getting just a little bit off track from the workplace.
Gotcha.
So for anybody who's just joined us, let me mention that the book is titled The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence, The People Side of Business. The book's co-author, psychologist Lee Hirsch, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And Lee, I know that you're very good at trying to give in-depth descriptions of how different elements of the human psyche works. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and pull you back whenever I can to specifically what's in this book about the workplace. This is such a beautifully written book, and you and your co-author came up with this wonderfully clever idea of putting your six principles that the two of you teach in your consulting work into a book in a fictional context. But let me just read from your book, The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence, these six principles that you and your co-author say are all important. Number one, the design of the brain determines human behavior. Number two, people are most productive in an emotionally safe and supportive atmosphere. Number three, people working together tend to replicate family structures and dynamics. Number four, people want an opportunity for growth to achieve mastery. Number five, people need structure to shape and motivate their behavior. And number six, individuals are different from one another. So you and your colleague, Tom DeMeo, go into businesses and teach these six principles, and you hope the end result is what?
A high performance organization which utilizes the human resources in a way that maximizes the productivity for the business and at the same time encourages and teaches and supports the growth of the employee.
So, Lee, the title of your book, The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence, and then the subtitle, The People Side of Business, does that imply, when you call this a third domain, that the first two domains, the technical and the usual business aspects, are the ones that most businesses pay attention to? And when it comes to what people need, that most businesses don't pay much attention to that?
Absolutely. I think you hit it the nail on the head. I don't know if we can do this on radio, but if you can imagine two cogwheels, one is the business, the service and product they make, and then they, on the other cogwheel right next to it that rolls around where they go click, 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 click together, and that is the business, financial, management of the business, not the creative or the product driven. But the third people, a third domain is the people. And the people tend to be the last one to consider.
And if I understand what I've read in your new book, Dr. Lee Hirsch, is that what you have found is that when you get managers to pay attention to what human nature is, based part on evolutionary psychology, based part on your years of experience as a therapist, the whole workplace becomes much more productive?
That's the end goal.
So we're going to have to ask you some specifics about that, so maybe we can all learn something about how to get along better in our workplace. And if you have a question or comment for Dr. Lee Hirsch, you're welcome to join the conversation. The phone number is coming up in just a moment. Our Our guest on this edition of Virginia Insight, psychologist and business consultant, Dr. Lee Hirsch. The new book he co-authored is titled The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and the number to call to join our conversation is 888-967-2825. Easy to remember is 888-WMRA-TALK. So if you are now or have ever been a workplace supervisor, were there some strategies that you discovered that got your employees working more effectively? If you are or have ever been an employee, did you ever run across a style of management that you really appreciated and because of it, you found yourself even more dedicated and hardworking on the job? 888-967-2825. So, Dr. Hirsch, what is it that you find needs to happen in a workplace for human beings to be inspired workers, to be as effective as possible?
The first thing that people need are circumstances where they feel safe. A second element is they have to feel a part of the group, not somehow in orbit around the group. They have to be invited in. And sometimes that's just the basic training and organization. And sometimes it isn't taught, and you kind of learn it as you go along.
But, Lee, what you're saying runs counter, I'm sure, to many business management attitudes where they feel like there has to be a certain amount of fear in order to motivate employees. You don't subscribe to that theory.
I absolutely do. I absolutely do, because there, if you think about putting the palms of your hand together, holding them up in front of your face and open, if on one side you have structure and the other side you have support, the nurturing and the shaping people's attitudes by not only saying, you know, this is wrong, and having your finger thrown in your face or somebody getting angry, imagine your supervisor coming and saying, look, and he's kind of puts his hand on your shoulder and says, you know, you do these things really well. But there's this one area that I feel and the executives here feel is essential for you to reach the potential that you can reach. And if you imagine it, instead of going eyeball to eyeball, chin to chin, but putting both looking at the situation together, because a manager or leader can't win if his or her workplace is not motivated. So even when you're giving critical information, you think about it as a teachable moment where you can help them do better. They can believe that you are behind them and want you to succeed, and you don't have to feel fear. Now,
Andrew from Winchester is calling us. He's been waiting on the line for a bit. Is it okay if
sure.
I go to that call? Andrew, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for psychologist Lee Hirsch, please.
Yes, I'd like to ask Dr. Hirsch how he believes his principles might apply to the public school system. And I think I'd also like to say at this point that despite her lead foot, his older daughter is a wonderful person, and I know her well, and I think you should be very proud of her.
Well, thank you very much. Funny you raised the issue of school systems. I spent 4 years on the Stanton School Board. And as is the case in so many circumstances, each individual department head or manager of a particular area of the school system, in this case that you're speaking about, they're in there tending toward, I got to get what I need, and if I don't kind of take that away from somebody else, then I'm not going to get it. So there's a competition. And one of the critical issues that this book lays out is that it's not just your department that you're wanting to do well. Success is defined when the whole organization does well, because it really is genuine attachment to the business, real caring for your colleagues, and a commitment to the organization at large. And I recall very distinctly one of our assistant principals who said, I need this, 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 and this. And we were also looking at the fact that we didn't have any money to pay teachers, make any pay raise, and they hadn't done so in 2 years. And she very graciously said, for the good of the school and the faculty, I'm going to cross these lines out of my list and let teachers get a well-deserved raise. So there's always tension. Is your commitment to the department you run, or is it to the whole? And we want to see more focus on the whole organization.
Andrew, thank you so very much for your call. We're looking at how to make you and your manager, if you have one, more effective at work. If you'd be willing to share your thoughts on that topic, please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Dr. Lee Hirsch, a clinical psychologist, a therapist in private practice, a business consultant, and co-founder of the Hirsch DeMayo consulting firm, is our guest. So I want to go back, Lee, if I can, to make sure that I track something that you were saying just before we got Andrew's call. You had talked about how important employees feeling safe and nurtured and appreciated in the workplace is. And that certainly is a theme that you come back to often in this new book, The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence. But then I asked you about the theory that some business managers apply, that their employees have to have a certain amount of fear. And it sounded to me like you said, yes, you agree with that. And so what I'm wondering is if you're saying that in an effective workplace, there has to be, in essence, both carrot and stick. But most important, the employees have to feel like things are being implemented fairly?
That's a good point. Yes, fairness is a very important issue. I would take exception of the idea that we're talking about coming down hard on people when they make a mistake. If they're a good employee and they just mess this up, or they have some kind of family chaos and they're not functioning at their capacity, as a supportive group, we want to have them, if they need to be able to go home and take care of their kid. But the other issue is that if people are encouraged, people have an intrinsic desire to learn. They are curious if they feel safe, secure, and valued. So it's not a – and leadership has a ladder, essentially, but it does include measurable, quantifiable goals. And it does suggest that the supervisor makes those clear to all in the organization and gets away from the, you messed up today, I don't know if we're going to be able to keep you. That's the last thing I'm going to do with an employee who has potential. Now, there are some employees who essentially, particularly early on, may seem to be very outgoing, skilled at what they do, but they tend to do what we call splitting, and they wind up kind of as troublemakers who gets one group angry at the other group, and then you create this negative atmosphere as opposed to an atmosphere that I've been describing. One of the graphics in the book that I like, perhaps because I thought of it, but we had a great deal of help in this book. We had a professional writer, Charlie Feingold, and without him, the book would not be what it is. We had another fellow who did a great job on the graphics, taking our ideas, and so it really was a collaboration of a lot of people. I just want to give credit where credit is due, and part in time, you can look up the blog that we have, Business Consultant Tips. I believe that's right. If you go to our website, www.hirschdemayo.com, you'll be able to see the tab on that one.
So you and your co-founder of Hirsch DeMayo Associates, Tom DeMayo.
Yep.
Do I understand correctly, it took the two of you some 3 years to write this book?
You understand very well.
Is it because getting the message across in the book that you have done so simply and eloquently is just much more difficult than talking about it, that you felt you had to hone the words and re-edit and rewrite and go back over it over and over again?
There were at least 5 revisions of the original book.
How did you come up with the idea to write about these principles, not as a usual textbook-style approach, but as fiction?
Well, people like fiction. And if somebody said, there's another business book on the market, I guess I should read it, but I really don't feel about it. Our story is a fictional case study that happens to be set in a hospital setting, but it could be in a school system. School boards have been known to be gain impasses. It can be in other governmental agencies, police. I've worked in college and university settings.
And it could also be in pretty much any kind of industry, any
Absolutely.
Kind of manufacturing industry. So let's talk a little bit about the storyline in the book. There's you call the hospital, the fictional hospital, that kind of feels in this book like it's based somewhere in Virginia. You call it Dominion Medical Center?
Yep.
And within the first pages of the book, there's a fairly new CEO who's come in because the man who spent many decades building up this medical center has had a sudden health problem, has had to retire. They're not really prepared for succession. This new CEO comes in, and there's a crisis at the hospital. Tell us about the crisis.
Okay. The crisis was twofold, It tells you how much I'm invested in the book and that I see it as our baby. And to make Tom's point, I have quipped to people that it took my wife 18 months to produce 2 children, and it took me and my partner to produce 3 years to produce a book. So I don't want to say that babies are easier, but we wanted to get it right.
So the crisis at the hospital jumps out at you in the first few pages of your book.
Okay, and that is what developed into essentially an epidemic of MRSA.
Scary disease.
Yes, and when I work in a hospital and I'm one of my various, I like lots of variety. So I do lots of different things because the common denominator for me is people. And I'm as interested in the janitor's feedback as I am the anybody else in the organization. But what happens at Dominion is the elder statesman, the CEO, who built this thing into a very well-respected regional medical center, has health problems, has to retire on very short notice. Nobody anticipated it, be it the board or anybody on the executive committee. He had to go. And so they took the CFO, the chief financial officer, and put him in that role as an interim CEO. And as the hospital board and the physicians executive group spent a year interviewing people to decide who's going to be the best fit to move us along beyond the great strides of the well-loved CEO had done. So it was taking it to the next level. And unfortunately, the CFO, who was very committed to doing excellent work, who burned the midnight oil, but he was simply not a people person. He was a numbers person. And morale went down. And then when the MRSA started to become well higher than national norms, the medical director, the chief nurse, all got very concerned, and somehow there was a disconnect. And we start the book basically when the new CEO comes in on his first day to work, and the first thing we did is to say to him, you know what, I told you wrong. That was another revision. He walks around the hospital, meets and greets people, is genuinely a people person. He is an MD. He has an MBA in business, so he's well qualified. And after about a month, he goes, you know, we got a people problem here. And he talks to somebody who he knows and respects, and gets the names of Hirsch and DeMeo. And he brings them in, and he interviews us and asks a lot of questions like Tom does. And one of the things he asks, well, how much is this going to cost? You know, we've been losing market share because of these things. And make no mistake, business hospitals are no less of a business than any other building.
I want to get
business,
back
I mean.
To this MRSA crisis at the hospital and how it's handled based on your six principles, because it is a fascinating story. And although it's about a hospital and a disease threat, it seems to be a situation that's applicable in all kinds of different organizations. So we're going to continue our conversation with psychologist Dr. Lee Hirsch in just a bit more than 60 seconds. The book is titled The Third Dominion of Organizational Excellence, The People Side of Business. The book's co-author, psychologist Lee Hirsch, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And to you who are listening, one reoccurring theme in this new book is that people are more productive in work environments where they feel safe, secure, and appreciated. Do you agree or disagree with that theory? 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our phone number. Translated, it's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. MRSA, the disease epidemic that is threatening to sweep through this hospital, is both a medical and business challenge in this fictional account that you've put together in your new book, Lee. And I know you're not a medical doctor, but I'm sort of taking it on faith that what I read in your book, that everybody is puzzled because MRSA should be a fairly easy threat to eradicate if all personnel in the hospital were taking basic precautions, cleanliness protocols seriously. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So then in this situation, the MRSA threat, the possibility of even epidemic breaking out in this hospital, is sort of symbolizing something that could be handled quite easily if people were willing to work together well. And the fact that it's not being eradicated easily is a sign that there's something wrong with the relationship between workers and management.
Yes. The fact that MRSA, which is a pretty nasty virus, to get rid of and is very easily transmitted, but it is also easy to avoid it, that's a sign, as Tom suggested, that somewhere, somehow, people aren't doing the little extra things like you walk out of the hospital room and you've been gloved and gowned, but you wash your hands anyhow, or we use the antibacterial soaps that are posted on every wall.
So one of the points that you're making is that people in this hospital are not doing basic things that they know they should be doing because they've kind of gotten to a point where they don't care all that much about their job, where they don't have the level of deep commitment that you would hope people in a hospital would have.
Exactly. And if I may, I'm going to segue to another, I think, important part. The guy who retired was of retirement age, but he was the elder statesman. He really built the business or the hospital, and he left suddenly. And he was the father figure. And the executive committee, which were leaders of all their departments, they've lost their leader. And the CFO is a very good accountant, but he's not a good people person. And people start feeling unfair when he starts sending out emails that, you know, this is getting worse. Our average length of stay is longer because people are getting sick with MRSA. All these things. Whereas if they felt safe with them and they were motivated because of people's inherent drive to do well, they would do it if they had that same feeling of safety and security.
One of the other themes that seems to come up reoccurringly in your new book, Lee Hirsch, is this sense of which employees feeling listened to by their immediate supervisors, but also by upper management, makes all the difference. And you have this wonderful example. It goes on at some length. I'm going to see if I can summarize it succinctly. The billing department in this medical center has felt for a long time that, like, they are the poor stepsister or the very poor cousin that's mistreated and misunderstood and ignored by everybody. And one of the upper managers, one of the executive team, recognizes this at some point, and he decides that it's been too long since they've had new equipment, new computers, had their offices refurbished. And so he goes in, I guess with a designer of some sort, and just redoes everything. And they have this beautiful new workspace to work in, but it's a workspace that doesn't work very well for them. It sort of works against what they need. And their reaction is, well, it's nice that somebody thought of us, but why didn't they come ask what we needed?
Bingo. You just, I'm very gratified that you have picked up on so many of the ideas in the book.
So why is it so hard for people in charge to go and ask their employees their point of view on how things might be improved.
Because employees are undervalued. Look what's happening in our very strained economy right now, where people are not being given full-time jobs so they don't have to pay them certain sorts of benefits.
Tell me more about this theme of employees being undervalued, because you've worked for any number of companies of different types. What is it that causes managers who certainly want their companies to be effective as possible to not see their employees as the type of valued assets you say they are?
That is, I think, if there's a takeaway message, it is to embrace your employees with a combination of support and structure. And the structure can involve growing to another level, being able to proceed and learn more, because employees who are getting opportunities to learn and grow are going to be happy employees.
But Lee, you're a psychologist. You know lots about how the human brain works. In your book, you talk a lot about aspects of evolutionary psychology and how they impact what goes on in the workplace. So my question again is, can you tell us anything about what might be going on in the mind of a manager or the mind of a top executive who never even thinks to talk to the line employees about what kinds of views they have? Is it something that goes back to what you were telling us earlier about the brain works from the bottom up, that that's not only true for employees, but maybe for managers and executives, is that somehow going and talking to people who have lower status feels threatening?
Again, I'm so pleased that you've been able to really pick up on key elements of this. The first assignments that the fictional case study, we got a new CEO, and one of the first things we do is to say, walk around and talk to people.
But that's hard for many managers to do. Hard for many people at top executive levels to go out to the loading dock, apparently because it so seldom happens, and say, hi, I'm John Smith. I'm executive vice president, and I just wanted to get your opinion about how things are being done here. Why do people feel threatened at asking those type of questions?
In many places they do, particularly in manufacturing. You're a low man on the totem pole, and if you don't show up 2 days in a row, you're fired, you can't come back, and they've got 10 people that are waiting in the wings.
So if it's a manager or an executive or anybody else, are there things that we can do, Dr. Lee Hirsch, so that we feel less threatened and more willing to communicate with our coworkers, with our employees, with our supervisors? Because the fundamental point in your book seems to be, when people feel more safe and secure, as well as know what the rules and the structure is, but when people feel appreciated and they don't feel threatened, they're effective. So what do we need to do so we feel less threatened, that we get away from this bottom part of our brain that seems to be in charge so much?
Let me address this in a slightly different way from the question. The manager of large businesses, you know, it may be a foreign business or a domestic business, but the wage roll folks don't ever see them. And one of the first assignments we give to our CEO in the book, Charlie, is to get out and talk to people. And initially people are kind of going, oh my, here comes the boss. But in some cases, they didn't know who the boss was. And that was his assignment from Tom and I as consultants, to really talk to everybody. And that is somehow contrary to the entrepreneurial spirit. I'm the boss. I tell you how to do it. If you don't do it right, you're history. And as opposed to having people are saying, you know, I've come across with something in my area of expertise that I really think could help you. And I think it would probably benefit both of us. That kind of collaboration is really what we look for. And John Pickering of Charlottesville, who's worked for the U.S. government and many agencies and is very well respected, he's the one who coined the term high-performance employees, high-performance organizations. And it is taking managers out of their comfort zone very often. But if you want loyalty, and this is the going back to this notion of family, not only do we bring family stuff home to work from home, you know, you're upset because you had a fight with your spouse and you're upset and somebody notices who's your manager and says, you know, get over it. We're here to work, not to hear you complain about the situation at home. Well, you know what? Leaving your emotions at home is about equal to leaving your left leg at home. And so the leaders, like a family, it's a family-like structure where the CEO is seen as the mother, the father, the administrative staff is seen as the children, and there's jockeying for position to get more money for the department or to get to be a VP quicker than somebody else. And the lower worker bees are the kiddies who really aren't to be considered. Well, as a parent, I learned pretty early that it was important to get information from my children or unexpected and unhappy events occurred.
And being a parent, as much joy as there is in it, is also one of the scariest things a human being can do. And I'm intrigued by how often in your book you come back to this idea of safety and security. So I'm wondering, before we run out of time, if you have... Well, let me put it this way, Dr. Lee Hirsch. It seems to me that what I'm hearing every time I ask you about how a manager can get past his sense of discomfort, his sense of feeling threatened at going and talking to even low-line employees and asking them their opinion. What I think I'm hearing from you, Lee, is he needs to get past that threat because the result is going to be so beneficial. There's going to be so much good that comes from it. So, in essence, is part of what you're saying, if you as a boss feel uncomfortable in exploring what some of your employees might suggest for improving things, force yourself to try it at least a little bit and see if maybe you don't get some really wonderful results?
Got to tell you, Tom, you're a good reader. Yes. And what's interesting is that, I don't know if you noticed, but you used the male, that gender, for the boss. He did this or he didn't do that. And one of the things we focus on in our book is diversity. But we look at it differently than is typically the case, which is, oh gosh, we have to have so many of this minority and so many of that minority, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, we look at diversity as an inherent strength to an organization. Because if somebody's looking at it from a different perspective, they may think of something we never thought of.
So we're going to have 20 seconds maybe before we run out of time. In that amount of time, do you have one point you most want people to take away from rethinking how to work in organizations?
The one point would be your organization is going to be as good as your people are.
Our guest has been Dr. Lee Hirsch, psychologist, business consultant, and co-author of the new book, The Third Domain of Organizational Excellence, The People Side of Business. Lee, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producers, Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are highly valued, and they are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.